Welcome back.
I have to warn you, I think today's material is the most difficult we've tried to understand. And I feel I understand some of it. I don't feel I understand all of it, so hopefully we can work together. But it's rough. Just a quick review. What we're dealing with is the rebirth of Istvar, Gilgamesh, from the egg. And we've seen two attitudes. On the one hand, Jung says, 285, I have the god in my pocket. And then on 286, he talks about serving. So it's a flip back and forth between... I'm tempted to say inflation and a recognition that the self is something that takes us in its service. We don't take it in its service. Although, to get the thing born does require the willpower that I think is expressed in his putting the egg in his pocket with the god.
So that would be power? Would inflation come along with power?
Well, yeah. In other words, this is how I understand it. If you want to break with tradition, that's already an inflation. But it's necessary. Yet, there'll be a price to be paid. And he hasn't quite figured that all out yet. He's still feeling his oats by saying, you know, I think as much as to say, well, I've overthrown the church. I've overthrown Victorian morality. Yippee. And so that break is a surge of power and willpower. But then right away he talks about serving it. So I don't know if he consciously realizes it, but what I think the unconscious is throwing up is, that's all well and good, but what you have discovered is going to have a power over you. And the reason I say that, if you look at the difference, let's say, between Volume 5 and his later work on alchemy, I think they're the two main periods of his creative output. Volume 5 is about establishing the willpower. And if you have no willpower, that's very important. We spend a lot of our time, you know, talking about consciousness and willpower. But once that's established, then we go back. And some people say, well, fine, I'm done. And I say, great, goodbye. Other folks will say, but, so what? And then you turn to the question of, what are you going to serve? And all of that, the reason I think this is so confusing, all of that is jumbled up in what's coming up in him. And what he will do for years after this is try to sort out these contradictions. But those of you who did the Nietzsche stuff have an advantage, because that's the way Thus Spoke Zarathustra was. It was just a jumble, mishmash of contradictory statements, which if you studied them, you could see contain elements that could form a larger picture, but you, the reader, has to form the larger picture. That's the difference between being possessed by the unconscious and having an ego that works with the unconscious. Okay, so far, it's a paradox, but that's the way it is.
It feels to me, though, that there's a difference between when we say power drive in the collective sense, you know, and
yeah,
possessed by a power drive, that they don't really keep the big picture in mind. They don't keep anybody else's needs in mind,
right,
as equal to or more important than their own.
Yeah.
Whereas with this, you're going back and forth,
yeah,
but you definitely have somebody else's needs in mind.
Yeah.
And that feels real different.
Yeah, very different.
It felt like he kept a balance. He saw clients, right?
Yeah.
He really had another life. Whereas Nietzsche was just obsessed with
it. He had no life, yeah.
He wanted to expound or tell everybody how stupid they were because they didn't believe in him.
Yeah.
He had no sense of itself.
Yeah.
It's as if that, you're talking about that container, mm-hmm. you know, if we can never get out of the container and see, yeah, I have this side and I have this side, but I'm also, I can look at myself from the larger picture that, that what Nietzsche couldn't do, but we know.
And that's another the miracle of Jung's life, that he could do that. I mean, this could have easily ended up putting him in a loony bin. Some parts I'm reading, I'm thinking, Jesus, Jung, you're almost crazy here. But it's the ability to go back and see the thing. Why one person has that and another doesn't, I don't know.
Didn't you say that at one time that he had read Zarathustra?
Oh, yeah, he had read it even as a young kid.
Really?
As a college student.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he had already read that when he was going through.
Right. Yeah. But I reckoned he went back to really study it after this because he realized, holy smokes, I just went through the same thing. Yeah. Something we got into last time, which we will continue today, is this business of the sun. It's terribly confusing. The it was bad enough last time, it gets worse today. The Isvar is the sun, and Carol said, well, that's not a complete manifestation itself. No, it's not. But it's the first manifestation of the self, one could say. And I think we'll see also the importance of that stage and what Jung then brings in to address it. And I'm just about two chapters ahead of you. And by the end of Hell, he still hadn't figured it out. So this will be, I think, what's going to take up a large part of the work from here on out. What really is the nature of this new thing that's come up? There's no precedent for it. So he had to figure it out all himself. And of course, naturally, he goes to old myth, which is the hero myth, yet ironically, it's the hero myth he's just debunked. So it's very complicated.
It's like he's going over the history of the evolution of this image for us.
Mm-hmm.
And as though he has combined his original experience, and like Carl was sort of mentioning last week, that he has laid it out very carefully for us, how it actually happened in his mind, so
yep.
that we can see clearly
yeah.
stages, even the stages of confusion.
Right.
In effect, he's laid out very clearly.
Yeah, I think not just for us, but for himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But is Jabbar in the stage of the self?
I would say so, yeah.
Okay.
What we're dealing with is the death and rebirth of the self. And so when it appears as light. But it will soon change. I mean, this is why, for example, fundamentalists are so obnoxious. They are caught up in the brilliance of their new understanding. And then only later you realize, well, it's got this problem, it's got this problem, it's got this problem, and I'm not human. If I simply live out of that insight, you know, think of the fundamentalists or think of the fundamental Islamists. I think the same thing. It's a brilliance and a huge motivation, but it's really immoral. Well, while thinking, oh, I'm the best thing on earth. And we'll see then that question of morality comes up today.
But is Jabbar equal Gilgamesh equals the hero? Becoming more human, not more...
Yeah. Though, ironically, when he reappears, he appears as sunlight. And I don't think sunlight is human.
It is
not human.
Oh.
It takes the moon to humanize it.
Well, I've been thinking about that. And when we look at the image of the evolution of Isdabar, we do have... the symbol of Isis there through the whole thing, and she is related to the moon aspect.
Yeah.
So he has that in him. We just don't see it at first.
Yeah.
Because that was what was incubating the egg.
It's always in the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think, really thanks to Carol, that this picture repeats that theme of the necessity of the self's first manifestation and its transformation, because the story that this picture alludes to, that Carol talked about, is the story of the God giving birth to fire, but realizing fire will eat him. So he's got to bring in milk. See, that's the feminine. That was really helpful. So what we're going to be wrestling with back and forth, is fire and milk in many different versions.
So we could say sun and moon?
Sun and moon, fire and milk, masculine and feminine, Ra and Isis. Yeah.
There's a hidden reference to milk coming up again when he makes another reference.
Maybe you can point that out,
please.
Okay. Well, I think that's what we did last time. Are you okay so far? If you're lost now, you'll be suicidal by the end of today.
Reason I was coming to these classes.
Take stock in my mortuary company. So we go to the opening of the egg, which
is the picture you just had up.
No, I think this is the picture.
No, I mean showing the opening, his illustration of the opening.
This, oh, I see what you're saying. Well, this one ended, wait a minute. Oh, I know what I want to tell you, too. That's image 64. I don't know whether it's the beginning of the new or the end of the old.
Is that the egg down there?
Yeah, that's the opening of the egg.
Mm-hmm. The egg that where the fire's coming out of, is that what you mean, Carol?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Image 64 right above the opening of the egg. So it's the
right before this section. And he entitles it Hiranyagarbha.
Right.
And that's the golden egg.
That's the reference to the fire.
Yes. And then he makes
and the milk.
And the milk.
Yeah. That's a Hindu reference. I wanted to mention this real quick, because some of you weren't familiar with the Sephirotic tree. Remember, somebody said, oh, this looks like the Sephirotic tree. And we're saying, what's the Sephirotic tree? Well,
can you spell that? Please?
Yeah, it's got a couple of spellings. S-E-P-H-I-R-O. T-I-C. Sephirotic. Or S-E-F-I-R-O-T. Here are some pictures of it. Pass it around. It comes from the Kabbalah, and I'll just mention it and then tell you why I think it's so important. And again, believe it or not, I think it holds the seed of another of Jung's later concepts. The mystical tradition of Judaism is called Kabbalism. You've probably heard of the Kabbalah, C-A-B-A-L-A. And in their cosmology, God has 10 emanations. And those emanations are depicted as 10 spots on a tree. So that's why it's called the Sephirotic tree. And they are all pictures from the Kabbalah that I'm passing around. Why is that so important? Because, see, the Old Testament has God as Yahweh. The Kabbalists say God has 10 manifestations. So the God image has developed. So I think that's one of the places where Jung realized God images change.
The old was what?
Well, Yahweh.
Okay.
Yahweh is one guy.
Okay.
And the Sephirah is 10 forces.
Is that older than the Yahweh?
No, way after Yahweh. It's okay. Sort of in the Middle Ages. I think it started in Spain, Kabbalah. So, it breaks away from that horrible, self-righteous and hypocritical morality of Yahweh. And it's a much more balanced and differentiated image of God. And I think that was one of the things that got Jung thinking, oh, look, God images change over time.
Is it that all the 10 emanations show sequential development of God, or that they are all different aspects?
Different aspects of God. I didn't bring them along with the R, but there's justice, there's mercy, you know, there's all the qualities that we would consider sacred are manifested.
And so the circles, there's 12 of those.
Yeah.
So they don't really correspond to this.
Not literally, but I think the pattern is similar. And we've seen that pattern of the tree with you know, circular spots several times.
Yeah, in alchemy, it's the tree of the sun and the moon.
Yeah.
The fruit of the sun and
yeah.
the moon.
And if you take the tree as growing, God is a process, not a state. So it's a short leap to the individuation process. As what's divine. We'll come up against that today, too. Okay, I just wanted to mention that, because we alluded to it last time, and I think it was a little confusing, but it illustrates that we're in a process of changing what we consider sacred. Another way to put it. I've been reading Islamic literature, and you know, why do the Islamists say a woman should cover her head? Because in the Bible, God says a woman should cover her head. So that behavior comes out of the understanding of God. If your God doesn't say cover your head, you don't cover your head. So it's not just about changing images of God, it's changing the way we understand how we live. And as far as Jung's concerned, it starts in the image of God. So any real change has to be a change of fundamental values, be another way to put it. Okay.
I just wanted to remind everybody that Hiranyagarbha, the title of the picture we were just looking at,
yeah.
Was described by certain Hindu philosophers as the scaffolding of the universe.
Yep.
And that idea of the scaffolding is going to come up going to be carried along in an image we might get to today.
Okay.
Could you spell that?
It's H-I-R. Mm-hmm. A-N-Y A-G-A R-B-H-A.
I've kind of seen that described. Okay, thank you. 130?
Now, the name of the painting, isn't that the Kapatha Brahmana? I'm
trying to realize, read what's up here.
Well, let's look at how
it
looks. I believe it is.
Oh, there it is. Okay. And he said scaffolding, right? Scaffolding of the universe.
Yeah,
is that the Sathapatha?
Yeah.
And which one is called Hiranyagarbha?
Well, that was an earlier one. The egg is called Hiranyagarbha.
Yes.
That's
right.
That's right. Rajapati.
So that's how we got started talking about Hiranyagarbha.
Yeah.
That was image 59.
And image 59 itself is the Hiranyagarbha image.
That's
what,
We go forward.
Okay.
59. That's image
64.
Oh,
there you go.
Oh, I see. Hiranyagarbha down here. Mm-hmm.
And then that text that he entitles it, the Sathapatha Brahmana, blah, blah. That is how we got to the milk. Because that passage is from the Sacred Books of the East, and it talks about Prajapati and Agni, and how Prajapati presides over procreation, and produces Agni, who then turns around and is going to eat Prajapati.
Right.
So then the sacrifice of milk is made.
Right. So why are we doing all this? Because in the story, that fire needs to be changed in the Hindu story. And that's what we'll be dealing with, is the change of the destructive aspect of that fire. What's the destructive aspect of that fire behaviorally? Well, the destructive aspect of living out your desire without thinking about what you're doing. We look at Penn State. See, that's fire. That's highly destructive. It's destroyed how many people's lives?
And yet there is the fire that burns away all that isn't needed as well. So there's a healing aspect to that too, the cleansing.
If you take it consciously. Yeah.
And see in the picture, not this one, but the one we were looking at before, all that smoke to me suggests that what was burned away is now the smoke.
You mean this thing?
But that's just my imagination.
Well, that makes sense because supposedly smoke is what carries the sacrifice to the transcendent.
So it contains both opposites.
But that idea of Prajapati and then Hiranyagarbha could be conflated in the Western mind because they're both the creative principle.
Yeah.
So that's how those two things connect.
Well, in this picture too, it looks like that fire is contained within those walls.
Yeah.
That's a big difference from just letting it burn.
Yeah.
Unattended or
unconstrained. And he's worshiping it.
So what would the walls signify?
It suggests to me a container. And he's figured out how to contain it.
So that feels more of me to be conscious.
I guess it's like you don't act. I mean, you have this fire, but you don't just unconsciously act out.
Yeah.
What is that called? Wu-wei?
Yeah.
Wu-wei? Is that it? But you don't, you have it burning in you, but you don't just go out and...
So a combination of consciousness and...
I think morality. reflection?
I'm interested in the structure of it as well. The fact that you have a floor and a ceiling of, you know, fire, that you have the tri-panel backdrop.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that was like the triune God image. That Keith at this point, and what's back behind there is the God, which could be the sea.
You've got
so there's
the fire,
but they are so there's you can see both sides, but they are separate.
You've got the fire above and the water, the image of water below, I think, on the wall.
You want to say anything about the historiated initial? I don't know if there is much to say, but you guys tend to say things when I think there's nothing to say.
What?
Well, I guess I could. When I look at his little shapes, you know, remember he made that statement about a secret language of shapes. And they talk a lot about that in Man and His Symbols. And it got me thinking about what visual influences might have come across, we might have been influenced by. And I looked around a little bit, and to me it seems like things that could have influenced him are Art Nouveau, for one thing, where they make those intricate shapes like and form things with them, like they'll form a woman's hair of those intricate shapes. Those are some examples. And then there is Arabic calligraphy. And in that calligraphy, those shapes, they form, the shapes form words, and those words are also an image of the meaning of that word, if that makes sense. So it's an image as language.
Mm-hmm.
And here are some examples. Like, I don't know, this is probably a poem about a bird, but mm-hmm. then the whole thing is the shape of a bird.
Uh-huh.
So
wow.
That's... And here's some modern calligraphy. I don't know what this says. Unfortunately, I couldn't get translations, but these shapes are really similar to Jung's, and they're shapes, and there's supposed to be, I think, some sort of water scene, and yet the shapes also say something, but usually they're poems. Or sometimes they'll just take all those shapes and make it into the shape of the thing that it is, like a dove. The word for dove, they'll turn all that word into a dove.
Mm-hmm.
So then it's like language of images.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that he is getting a very similar feeling to that.
This is Arabic calligraphy.
Yeah.
Contemporary.
Yeah. The other person was more traditional.
Yeah.
Or peacock.
Peacock, for sure.
Mm-hmm. But that's probably a poem about a peacock within those shapes. Which is, that is so...
Yeah, it's language and image working together.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
It's so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I get that feeling when I look at Jung's shapes, though, that that's not just an A. That's an A that's saying something to me that it's only registering in the
mm-hmm.
unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
But what is it? You know, it's working on me. I can feel it, but I don't know consciously what it's saying to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then it seems to me he does that with all his images.
Mm-hmm.
Because he started, you know, he didn't start with this language of shape in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But then he got into it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I talked about him trying to bring the world of abstraction into our more grounded earthly reality, as though he wanted to transform that abstraction of the spirit into something meaningful, something earthly.
That will definitely come up today. thank you.
I wonder, too, if there, I mean, for each of us, if we don't have shapes that resonate with us, just like a writer would have certain words or a composer might have phrases that they use over and over again. In fact, the romantic, during the romantic period, they would have a phrase that they dedicated to someone that they loved, and they would use that in creative ways throughout all of their works. Like Schumann did that, Brahms did that, and they would call it the Clara phrase or whatever, and you could find that throughout his work buried somewhere in there. It might be a little bit different, but it's, you know, recognizable.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, as I guess all of us are drawn to certain types of music or certain things that really resonate with us, and I wonder if we don't have that for shape as well.
I think he says that we do, if I recall. I think in his letters he talks about that. But there's definitely a family of shapes that he's
using.
That kind of looks like a snail. Mm-hmm.
They seem to go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just saying, a lot of them seem to be snake-like, you know,
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Interesting to go back and see at what point he started doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Carol?
We talked about when he started doing it, mm-hmm. the change that happened. It's easy to see in the book where it starts. You want to flip backwards? A little, and see where he starts making those flame shapes for the secret language.
Right, the life.
Well, you're talking about this kind of intricacy.
Yeah,
go
yeah.
Had he? When was
I think we're already.
See, we're seeing the beginnings of it in that picture that he just had.
D, yeah, with the D.
Mm-hmm.
What chapter was that?
These are more geometric.
Right, but I think it's a progression. I think he's working through something there.
They become more curvilinear. Mm-hmm. They start out more.
When was it that he did all the mandolins?
Well, that's coming up.
Coming up. There was a period in his life when he did a bunch of them. Did them every day. Are those the same series of mandolins?
That was before that. That was he was a doctor at the prisoner of war, but the country club for the British prisoners of war. I guess the guys who escaped into Switzerland in World War I.
That would be afterwards. After at least where we are. No.
Before.
In terms of the illustrations, he did those in a later point. Okay.
Yeah. Right. That sketching he did, I think.
Okay, so
in World War I.
Right. So the text kind of coincides with World War I, but the illustrations of the illuminations came after the war.
Yeah. Well, that's a good question.
I'm wondering if he did develop some of these.
He may have.
Mandolas. Some of these were borrowed from some of those early mandolas. Some of these forms he found satisfying in those early mandolas that he may have found useful in his.
Now that I think about it, it would have to be, because this was done 1913, 1914, 1915, and World War I was 1914 and 1918. So World War I was going on while he was doing this. Mm-hmm. And in Switzerland, at least, I think, you go for like 3 months service. So when he was working in the mountains, it wasn't he was there for years. He was there for his stint.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what he did every day.
Mm-hmm. Sketched them.
Yeah, I'm wondering if you build on your own, you know, the images that you develop, and I think he might have discovered some of these forms in those early mandolins.
Could very well be. I wonder if that notebook has been saved. I don't know. It sounded like it was a little pocket notebook he just took out and drew, penciled in. That's what I imagined.
Well,
He was a doctor, a physician. He said it was the prisoner of war camp for British internees. So I assumed that meant, you know, guys that might have parachuted or captured by the Germans and escaped over the border into Switzerland, where then they couldn't go anywhere because there was war all around them. So they were prisoners of war, but in Chateau de, which would be sort of like saying they were prisoners of war in Aspen. Because
yeah.
It's, you know, that's the big, bitsy ski area.
Glad to be there.
Yeah.
Well, I've noted to myself that the abstractions begin with historiated initial 22. And that's when he meets the anchorite.
Hmm.
And at that point, he comes across, he's thinking a lot about Logos and how to have, the Logos from above versus mm-hmm. the Logos from below.
Balance the two.
Yes, and it's like his living abstractions. I don't know if I called them then or if we did together, but they want to find that, to represent that Logos from below.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I know to myself that historiated initial 22 is where they start.
What page is that one? Is that not so cool?
That's 22, but there's one earlier than that you turn to.
That's D.
Yeah.
Now, which initial is that?
That's 15.
Let's see.
Well, this is the historiated initial 22.
22.
So about that general area. Now, the one you're talking about is on the page, a couple of pages before that.
But aren't the pictures and the historical?
See, we see a real difference from there to the next.
Let's see.
To the next image.
So historiated initial 22 is from page 22-23.
But we see it before that.
Mm-hmm.
The beginning.
That's the biggest, the most obvious. I guess that is where they're carried into the actual scenes, as opposed to just the initial. Mm-hmm. I think that's the first scene.
Right, and then we see the tree growing.
Prior to that,
center.
We saw the initials.
Well, it's sort of a different border.
Mm-hmm.
But still,
it's the beginning of those shapes.
And quite different from...
And that's different.
Mm-hmm. And everything before that is very different.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's where it begins.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that, and he thinks it seems to happen when he encounters the anchorite.
Before that, all
I've always
seen is...
Although
there...
That's breaking together and then he's breaking together.
I don't see that as the same kind of abstraction.
No, it's different, but it's still...
So see, those are like layers of... We talked about those as layers of earth.
Yeah, everything else is...
This is... back in with the first book. Initials. Some of those patterns.
Why couldn't the symbols of language be part of the unconscious?
They are.
So like, I mean, the man in these stories, a lot of those symbols look like his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he ever saw it, but...
The what?
The symbols from the Mayan Indians.
Oh.
They look a lot like that, so it's like there's a language in the unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
It's
yeah.
not just...
He talks about that.
Interesting.
But if you look at the Polynesian... cultures too, they have that something very similar to that as well.
Okay. The opening of the egg. On the evening of the third day, I kneeled down on the rug and carefully opened the egg. Something resembling smoke rises up from it, and suddenly Izdubar is standing before me, enormous, transformed, and complete. His limbs are whole, and I find no trace of damage on them. Where am I? How narrow it is here. How dark, how cool am I in the grave? Where was I? It seemed to me as if I had been outside in the universe. Over and under me was an endless, dark, glittering sky. And I was in a passion of unspeakable yearning. I think that's very important. That's the fire. And it's not good or not bad. But if you live it out unreflectively, it can also be trouble. But at the same time, it is the first manifestation of the self. So for my taste, these spiritual takes on Jung conveniently miss the fact that it starts, self starts in body passion. But it sure can be a mess. That's why we've got to see how to keep it from being destructive. And I think that's a lot of what he's dealing with here. Streams of fire broke from my radiating body. I don't know if I need to read all that. I surged through blazing flames. I swam in a sea that wrapped me in living fires. Maybe the last line. Where was I? I was completely sun. That's what Carol was wondering about. So as the first manifestation, it feels like the solution, but it's really only the starting point.
What touches me here is you have this new God image who's also questioning.
Uh-huh.
And at the same time, you know, Jung is questioning this image. It is questioning itself as well, and I think that is new.
Mm-hmm.
So the sun is a starting point. Are we saying the transformation is still in process?
It's just starting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this will help you, but it might be worth a little detour.
Keep this in mind as we go. That's the number in mind as we just suffer through that thing.
The self is a process, and what we're dealing with now is the birth of the one, I believe. And each stage of the development of the self has its own logic and its own rules and its own personality and its own characteristics, which when compared to another stage look contradictory. So we're going to get this big bleh coming out here, but I think what Jung then did was went back and see how what looks like a mishmash were really jumbled manifestations of different phases of the self. So the one phase is when you are gripped.
Yes.
Passion,
okay.
Despair, depression, rage.
Emotion.
Lust. And you either live that out or you don't, but whatever you do, you've got to do it consciously, which will lead you to a conflict. Within that passion is a conflict.
And that's the two.
And that's the two. You live through that, you get the resolution, which is the three. The third thing resolves. And then that third thing has to collide with the world and become human, and that's the four.
This is the axiom of Maria.
You could say that, yeah.
What are you calling it?
Well, it's just what she laid out in Number and Time.
Who's she?
Yvonne Franz. As the stages of the self. So I'm going to try this anyway. Hope it works. That what we're dealing with now in the sun is the one. In other words, Jung has separated from should, and he feels a new strength. And that is his own desire, which feels, in comparison to the previous stage, like a development. But in fact, it's really the beginning of a development. Because there's plenty of rules that support avoiding this whole thing.
Could we say today's narcissism is that we're...
Is one of those ones, yeah.
We're stuck in the one.
Definitely.
Okay.
Could you say that in projection recollection, the one is when you first have that, that wow of...
Yeah.
This guy looks great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you think, oh... 6 months later, well, maybe he isn't so great.
Right.
See, then you're in the two. So the one is often accompanied, maybe even always accompanied, by a projection.
Right, okay.
And then to solve it, you have to withdraw the projection, then you're in two. Then you start reflecting. Two is reflection.
I
think they'll just
stay in one.
Yeah. Some people stay in one. Some people never get to one. If you completely repress your desire, you never get to one. If you live your desire out, you stay stuck in one. Two dangers.
So Christiana Morgan stayed in one?
She stayed in one. Yeah.
She wasn't willing to give the one up because it was...
too exciting.
Yeah.
And we'll be talking a lot about evil. Well, it killed her.
Was Nietzsche stuck in?
I think Nietzsche was too, yeah.
So that's an identification as an archetype, as
mm-hmm.
we could say that.
Mm-hmm. Remember he met Lou Salome and I think 30 minutes later proposed marriage to her? Mm-hmm. Not a lot of reflection in there.
What about Lou?
What about her?
What did she get?
That's a tough one. I'm not sure she got past much. She dabbled. That's exactly what, Liliana Fryrone wrote a book about Nietzsche, and that was her assessment, that she was just a dabbler. She's apparently very seductive and just lived off of seducing these geniuses. Freud, Nietzsche, and... Rilke.
Marilyn Monroe and who is her friend? They made a list of all the men that they were going to seduce.
And they did.
And they did.
Yeah.
And supposedly she was with Einstein. I don't know if anything happened.
Well, he really loved women. Mm-hmm. He was a ladies' man, but he certainly. Was not a brainiac that you might think.
A brainiac?
Yeah.
There's a movie coming out called One of My Weekly Mirrors.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Really?
Exactly. It looks exactly like her.
Yeah.
It's tragic.
Yeah, it really is. She was seducing a young man in England who just fell in love with her. Really. But, that's all she wanted to do was get in front of that camera and be the. What is it in the way of the dream? Ron calls it the Maryland number, when a woman is stuck in, you know, production and just being, she wanted to live out that projection, everybody
yeah.
was projecting on her. This.
That was the energy she got.
Yeah, terrific amount of power. I think I told you about that physical therapist I saw for quite a while, who was extremely beautiful and had guys falling all over. And she said to me once, well, she said, I always get what I want. And I said, but do you want what you get? She didn't answer, but she died a year later. She didn't even make 40. Cancer. That amount of intensity can't be sustained without reflection.
It
just burns you up, yeah.
And then with Marilyn, she became like a ghost. Mm-hmm. She never did find her real self.
Never, right. Okay. Oh, Isdabar, Divine One, how wonderful you are healed. Healed was I ever sick, who speaks of sickness? I was son, completely son. I am the son. So that's when libido, energy, desire is felt to be the answer. Let me see. Inexpressible light breaks from his body. It's more of the same. I must cover my face. You are the sun. So he's caught up in this whole one thing right now. So we go to this one. I don't know if there's much there. Let me bring that down a little bit.
I also felt like it was very interesting that he opens the egg. The egg does not open on its own. He makes that very clear that he's the one who broke the egg open.
Yep. You want to interpret that?
I'm just, the God image, the new God image can't be brought into reality without the human being.
And it shows the importance of the whole modern death of God, I think. That we had, there Nietzsche was right, we had to kill him. And then we have to go about making sure there's a replacement. It emphasizes the role of the ego in this process. I don't know if you remember that phrase in we did Living Symbol that stuck with me. She said, you have to provoke grace. So it's not just the old, you know, worshipful God knows best. It is an active engagement in the establishment of life's values. Part of the time you're extremely active, part of the time you're receptive.
In that case, the God would reject, you have to be receptive to it.
And none of this would happen if you weren't asking questions.
Yeah, okay.
If all you do is go around blaming the world, mm-hmm. this will never start.
Mm-hmm. So the God image projects on the human being, and the human being projects on the God image.
Apparently,
somewhere
yeah.
in the middle of that is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But in the beginning, it has to be the projection, because otherwise it isn't going to come to consciousness.
Right. I opened the egg. This is pretty much the same. I opened the egg, but God left the egg. He was healed, his figure shown, etc. I caught the Mighty One and held him in my cup, and he was the sun itself.
Right. Okay.
Bottom of... 26. Basic idea there is sun and rebirth are equated. But pretty soon that will get challenged. Now I think it gets hard. So let's go through it. I wander toward the east where the sun rises. I probably wanted to rise too as if I were the sun. I wanted to embrace the sun and rise with it into daybreak, but it came toward me and stood in my way. It told me that I had no chance of reaching the beginning. But I lamed the one who wanted to rush down in order to set with the sun in the womb of the night. He was deprived of all hope of reaching the blessed western lands. He just contradicted what he said in the last paragraph.
Wasn't he talking about what happened in the past?
Well,
isn't this what just happened?
Yes.
When he met Isabel?
Yes. But hang on.
He caught the sun. I kept wanting to put a had wandered, a had caught in there.
Yes, this is where I get, this is where I think it's confusing.
Yeah.
Because he's talking about it, he's confabulating the original state of Isdabar with his current state. So I think he's getting confused.
You do? It seems to me like he's just reviewing.
So this happened. His nocturnal mother when he... when he carried the egg in his pocket and incubated it, and then he rose up renewed, reborn to greater splendor, which is what just happened.
See, I caught the sun without realizing it and carried it in my hand. Which sun is that, before or after the transformation?
He didn't realize at the time that Isdabar was a potential sun.
Turns out I had caught the sun without realizing it.
And that was the sun as it was going down, at the down going of the sun. So as it was setting, that old image was setting.
Isdabar wanted
was
to
caught,
go down.
Right,
too.
And it was caught within the human being, Jung, in order for it to be renewed. And this is the Egyptian story of the renewal of the sun daily. Doesn't it get taken into a boat? Mm-hmm. And in the down going. And to me then what happens is there's renewal for both.
And then in the next paragraph he talks about, okay, he's just declared himself the son, now what about me? And then he goes on to describe what happens to him.
While he rises, however, I go down.
Yeah.
Yeah, that there it makes sense to me.
I know. Well, the other two definitely seem like just a review of what happened, what went down. Because it continues on in the same storyline. While he rises, Isdabar is the sun. I go down.
I probably wanted to rise as if I were the sun. Yeah, I see what you're saying. He who wanted to go down, who's the he?
Isdabar.
But Isdabar is the sun.
Right, but he doesn't know that yet. He didn't know that when he put him in the egg, that he was going to be a potential son.
Well,
this is in retrospect.
I see.
And Isdabar had announced that he wanted to go down with the sun way back when Jung encountered him.
Remember the one image with the big Isdabar is laying on the ground, and he had been laying there all night long.
He had talked to Jung about wanting to go down and to that land.
In the west, right?
Yeah. Okay. Maybe we should take a break. We'll pick up with when he rises, however I go down. That's easier, I think. Let's have a stretch.